Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty, it's time for another edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We're taping this late at night.
Woo!
It's not really late at night for me.
Oh, that's right. You're on the West Coast. Here it's Toy Department after dark here in Minnesota.
Yeah, well, it's dark here too. Although I gotta say, I stepped outside. Was it yesterday? Yesterday at around maybe 6:30 p.m. and for the first time in forever, it was like a little light still.
Yeah, well, you know daylight savings time's like 2 weeks away. It's like next weekend.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. That concludes this edition of the calendar portion of the podcast.
And weather. So how's the weather?
You don't understand, though, man. Like,
oh, no,
when you
I
live
understand.
In a state with, like, I guess you do. You spend some time in Chicago, yeah.
My whole upbringing. That's why I live here, man. I went back for 2 years after college and then some time in San Francisco, so like probably six, seven years in California total. I tried to go back.
It's hard, man. But we've turned the corner to spring, and yeah. Like there's definitely a pep in everyone's step.
Oh, man, when you're in a real winter climate, those like 55-degree April days where all of a sudden people start wearing shorts and stuff.
I was just going to say, we had a 55-degree February day.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw dozens of people in shorts.
Like, you'll start to see women in sundresses on, like, in 50-degree weather just because winter has become so desperate.
Yep. And it is very relative, man. When you've been dealing with, you know, teens for weeks and it gets to be 30, it feels like 50, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For sure. All right. We have some fascinating non-weather and calendar topics tonight.
Theoretically.
But we should probably start with something that was not all that fascinating to me. This year's Oscars.
Okay.
Started strong, right? Like, Chris Rock comes out of the box with a great monologue.
I thought it was... I think great might be underselling it. I mean... I think we undersold what an incredibly tough position Chris Rock was put in.
Perfect guy to be. If you're going to put someone in that position, though, he's the perfect guy, right?
No, no question. I mean, I think in many ways the Oscars got lucky on that.
Yeah.
But just to address the issue directly and... yet be funny while also being cutting and poignant. I thought it was pitch perfect.
Yeah, no, I have, look, no issues with the monologue. Like I said, tough spot, and I think he handled it as well as he could. I did think that, you know, the controversy took a little bit more of the show than maybe I was expecting. Did you feel it was heavy-handed?
You mean when you say the controversy, you mean the fact that they were trying to make up desperately for not nominating any actors or actresses of color?
Well, there were a lot of bits. We did a lot of bits. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was but at the same time, I don't know about you, excuse me, but I have heard people talk about how they thought the Girl Scout bit was, like, not subversive enough or something, you know? So, like... I don't know that they had any choice but to address it as much as they did. It was such a big part of the narrative that if they had just stopped addressing it after Chris Rock did his monologue, I think that would have been noticeable.
Sure. I also think that there is a line between stop addressing it after the monologue.
Yeah.
No, and bringing it up every 10 to 15 minutes, you know what I mean?
It was pretty constant, but I wonder how much of that show. How much of that do you think is Chris Rock's decision versus, like, the Oscars establishment versus maybe just... Because some of it felt like, more than any other Oscars I can remember, I felt like presenters were ad-libbing.
Yeah, well, I think they did something, and, you know, when you start thinking about ways of, like, okay, understanding that they're going to do all the awards, that's what they do, how do we make this a show that, you know, it's a better TV show? You know, I think one of the ways forward is what you saw, that they got a lot of funny people and just let them be funny.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get moments like Sacha Baron Cohen.
Did you enjoy that?
I thought that was tremendous.
I did
and
too.
When I heard the story, I don't know, have you heard the story of how, like, he had to sneak it by him? They basically told him he couldn't do any costumes and he had to play it straight. And
really?
He came dressed up and, like, snuck into the bathroom with his wife, and they dressed him up in the Ali G getup, like, in a handicap stall.
That's dedication, man.
Yep.
I like it. I like that a lot.
So he told Chris Rock, he, like, went over the bit with Chris Rock, and Chris Rock gave him the okay, and then they're nice. Like, yep, we're going for it. So, but yeah, letting funny people be funny. And I think those are some of the better moments, and certainly some of the more interesting moments, whether it was you know, Sarah Silverman, Kevin Hart, I thought was funny. You know, they let him come out and do some stuff.
Agreed.
So, you know, I think if we saw more of that, you know, any chance to get more like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler in our lives doing bits, great. The other thing that I thought was actually I kind of enjoyed as something as a way forward to make the show a little bit more watchable. Did you like the thank you crawl?
Yeah.
I'm all about it.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, I don't know how much time it actually saved, because it seemed like the people who felt like it still went ahead and thanked half the people that were on the crawl.
Sure.
But yeah, I think it's a really nice way to take some of the, like, nonsense of award acceptance off of the table. I will say, it was still way too long.
Oh, yeah. The show was way too long.
Way too long.
Look, the only way to cut the length of the show is to get rid of some of the montages, right? Things like that. And I just don't know if you're going to see that happen.
I mean, I think there's a real question of how much we need to do the nonsense with the best pictures where we pretend like we're watching the whole goddamn movie in the middle of the Oscars.
Yeah.
That might just be me. And I don't know how much time that really saves overall, but if, like, I do not need, although I gotta, on the other hand, just watching the clips of Room again brought me right back to the theater. I was getting goosebumps and, like, feeling anxious, and it kind of convinced me that I think Room should have won Best Picture.
Really? So I was, you know.
But Spotlight was a great choice.
Because I literally saw Room the night before the show and enjoyed it very much. But Spotlight was the best movie I saw.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's not true. I mean, I think Spotlight probably was the best movie of the year, so it is a deserving winner. But there's something about the way Room affected me very viscerally and directly, and I think, like, it was just a very affecting movie. I'm not, like, few I've ever seen, honestly. Like, Schindler's List level for me. And obviously,
for
different reasons and in different ways.
Were you trapped in a shed as a child?
No.
No.
I don't even, like, have claustrophobia or anything. I just thought it did such an incredible job of creating suspense and tension without really. I mean, there was obviously the one scene, spoiler alert, for 5 seconds, but in the truck, where the kid is trying to escape, that, like, was obviously had incredibly tense for obvious reasons. Right. But the whole movie, I just felt I was on the edge of my seat. I had goosebumps. It was, you know, it made me feel dramatically. Mm. Spotlight doesn't do that. It's an amazing film.
That was actually my point. Is, you know, I mean, look, maybe not to the sense of, like, goosebumps. But to me, that's Spotlight's greatest strength, is that I found Spotlight to be riveting. Like,
riveting.
Can't look away, want to know what happens next. And it's essentially, it's a procedural movie. It's just about journalists doing their job. And to take a story like that, that's so basic, and make it into something so gripping, I thought it was a real achievement.
I don't disagree with any of that. It's just, it's a different effect is all. And I think the effect of Spotlight, and maybe more accurately, the like particular film craft of Spotlight, makes it a much more likely Best Picture winner, certainly. That being said, I'm glad The Revenant did not win, because several of the movies I thought were better movies than The Revenant, even though I liked it. And I'm glad Leo won. I didn't think it was close to the best movie of the year. And yeah. I don't think Iñárritu should have won.
Are you glad that Leo won, really?
Yeah. The man deserves to have an Oscar.
I guess. I don't know.
Was there anyone? Who's the leading man that you thought was desperately overlooked?
It's not. Well, I don't know that. I don't know that I did. I don't know that I did. I just don't know that I. The sentiment of it's so and so's turn.
No, I agree. It's a stupid sentiment. But in a year where nobody stood out so extremely,
well, I thought Damon was great in The Martian.
But better than Leo? I don't know that I'd say that.
I mean, that whole movie is Damon. Good. The movie succeeds entirely because of Damon, right?
Yeah, but I didn't think that.
Nothing could say that about Leo, I mean, I guess. But.
Yeah, and I didn't think that movie was. I didn't think either movie was Best Picture.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's very. The Martian's very good. No, I wouldn't argue.
Yeah, The Revenant's very good. I think they're both very good movies, and they both had really good performances from really good actors. Was one significantly better than the other? I don't think so. Would it have been a tragedy if Damon had won? No. But I do think Leonardo DiCaprio has, you know, is as deserving of an acting Oscar as any man who hadn't had one. And this was a good chance for him to get it.
All right. Well, maybe. I'm gonna undercut my final point here.
Quickly, I hope I'm not stepping on it, but while we're quickly talking about who deserves what, I would also just like to slip in that Alicia Vikander absolutely did deserve the Best Supporting Actress Oscar.
For a different movie.
For a different movie.
For Ex Machina.
It's absurd. I have not seen The Danish Girl. There's no way she was as good in it as she was in Ex Machina.
What if she was incredible in The Danish Girl?
Yeah, she could have been. Ex Machina is a next level, unbelievable performance, and it was obviously Oscar worthy.
If you were to, like, just on your way to work tomorrow, like, ask every person that you saw, have you seen The Danish Girl? How many people do you think you'd have to ask before you got a yes?
Ironically, probably about the same number as if I asked the same question about Ex Machina.
Probably true. But I'm just curious. Like,
someone who's actually seen it.
I bet double the people who've seen it. The Danish Girl saw Ex Machina. At least double.
Wait, you think Ex Machina got more?
Ex Machina got some notice. Ex Machina made some money.
I bet the Danish Girl made more.
Ooh,
we should check.
Right. Yeah, you look that up. And I would point out too. This is a thing that I forgot about. I actually thought it was a really cool moment that Ex Machina won for best special effects, for visual effects.
Agreed. And I thought it was awesome that Mad Max won as many awards as it did, because that was a phenomenal movie.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the idea that a movie with the kind of budget that Ex Machina had could beat, beat out a Star Wars and a Mad Max for a visual effects award is pretty impressive.
Do you realize how close The Force Awakens is to passing Titanic in all-time worldwide box office?
I don't, but I'm guessing I'm almost surprised it hasn't done it yet.
Well, that's number two on the all-time list. So, all right. So I was going to look up how much money did Ex Machina make?
Yeah.
Lifetime gross... $25.4 million.
Oh, I would be stunned if the Danish Girl's over 10.
Well, be stunned, but you were right. It's 11, which is still way under Ex Machina. Wow, I would have thought they were very similar. Either way, not very many people saw either movie.
No, so... but look, $25 million is not nothing.
Like, no, that's... it's not. You're right.
Some people saw that. And it's a good watch. I think we'd both recommend it, as you can
tell.
Great
movie. Great movie.
All right, so yeah, so now I'm definitely undercutting my point because we've gone through half the show. But I feel like not only in the lead up, but in the aftermath, there's just a sense of blah about these Oscars. And, you know, the ratings certainly reflected that. And I don't – honestly, I don't think it's so much the Oscars so white thing.
No.
As it just – or maybe it's just the people who's a lousy year for movies, or maybe just people are tired of the general self-congratulations aura of that show.
Or are just – or is it just harder to draw television eyes to an event these days?
No. Actually, you know, the things that do well on television eyes – are live sports and award shows. Those are the things that are trending up.
That's a good point, yeah.
In a market that's trending down. So, you know, when the biggest award show goes down, it's telling you something.
Obviously, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, first of all, I'm always a little when it goes down a little bit, like ratings. the rating systems make me a little bit queasy, so I never want to give too much credence to it. But if we're just going to talk generally about why might it not draw as many eyes, I gotta believe the fact that it wasn't a great movie year, I guess. Although, as we've had this conversation, I've thought of lots of movies I love this year.
Right. And you had some pretty successful movies in the Best Picture race. Movies that made a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It would be hard for me to say what would make it worse than a previous year.
I don't know. But I do feel like there's something a little disposable about it. Like, I'll be shocked if I remember anything about the show in 2 months.
Well, tell me what you remember about the previous year's Oscars.
All right, that's a fair point.
Outside of like a handful,
like the big winners, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, outside of a handful
Michael
of
Keaton
major moments
robbed.
Each
I remember
year,
that.
Yeah. Right? Michael Keaton, you know, you outside of the big moments, no one really probably remembers much of any Oscars, right? I mean, it's just not.
Yeah, like I'm blanking on the host. Was it Crystal last year for like the? Was it like that the year that Crystal had kind of overstayed his welcome?
That sounds reasonable, but I truly don't remember.
Yeah, you're right. I guess it's all disposable. Speaking of which, let's dispose of it, because you want to take a shot at a guy who I desperately want to have shots taken at. So
yeah,
let's move forward and talk about Coach Mike Krzyzewski. I should reveal in my. You know, my bias here in that I am a Carolina admirer. So I'm always going to tend to look at Krzyzewski in the negative. But
I'm not.
You don't have a rooting allegiance here, right? And so you are – this is a clear-eyed rant that you want to have.
I think so, and I'm not here are my biases. First of all, I don't watch a ton of college basketball, to be perfectly upfront. Second of all – I am notoriously not only opposed to, but kind of like overly upset about things that are overrated or overhyped or overrespected in very particular ways. It's a bug up my behind for as long as I can remember. And in the case of Duke and Mike Krzyzewski, he in particular and the school in general is put up as this paragon of respectability and quality. And while I, far be it from me to question his actual coaching acumen, because basketball expert though I may hope to be, that's what do I know compared to him? Nothing. And he's had tremendous success as a coach in a variety of ways. So this is not about whether or not he can coach a game of basketball. It's about the fact that Duke supporters and fans will tell you about how they do it the right way, and they're all, oh, it's smart kids, it's a real school, and all this sort of nonsense. And you got creeps and chumps like Grayson Allen tripping people multiple times, not just illegally, but dangerously and despicably, frankly, in the middle of basketball games. And it's the kind of behavior that there's always someone on Duke that does some garbage like that. And Mike Krzyzewski passes the buck on it and ignores it entirely. Oh, we've dealt with it internally. But they issue no punishment. And meanwhile, people are
but he got a stiff reprimand from the league.
Yes, a stiff reprimand. And meanwhile, you can't walk 10 feet without some Duke creep who's got a Mike Krzyzewski quote on his desk or in his G-chat status about how discipline is critically important. And the guy's a fraud. And just like, you know, Duke fans will talk about how, Kentucky's a bunch of cheaters. John Calipari's had probation everywhere he goes. He does it all illegally, and people want to complain about recruiting cheats, but Mike Krzyzewski does it the right way. He's a respectable, serious man, and it's a bunch of crap, because he's every bit the slimy basketball coach that all these other creeps are, and he's doing it in the same ways. He's just either more loved or better at glad handing or palm greasing, or he's just luckier and hasn't been caught yet. And it's as simple as that to me. And the fact that he is put forward as this pure saint of basketball is beyond absurd to me, and I find it very frustrating. And the Grayson Allen thing brought it out of me, because I'm literally looking at quotes on Twitter about discipline from Mike Krzyzewski, and this kid's he's a terror. And like,
a menace.
He is. And that kind of cheap garbage, you have to be enabled to do that stuff. Mike Krzyzewski could keep a Grayson Allen from behaving that way if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about winning basketball games. That's all it's about. That's what it's purely about, just like every other basketball coach in the country.
And I think that's, you know, one of the sort of the mitigating aspect of this rant. So like, it's not like you have to accuse him of doing anything illegal, although he sort of did.
Look, do I know it for a fact? No. Is there every reason to believe he's engaged in every slimy practice that all the other major college coaches are doing? Yes.
Right. The point is not that he's any worse. The bottom line is that there's no reason to believe he's any different. None.
Exactly.
None.
Exactly.
Plenty of stuff go on with that program over the years.
Exactly. Say what you want about Rick Pitino, at least it's all on the table.
Yeah. Now, I do feel like, literally, I do feel like...
Nailed it.
The mainstream, like college basketball media, and I think people who are around the game a lot, I do feel like some of them have caught on to the notion that Duke is now a one-and-done program.
Yeah.
Just as much as Kentucky is.
Exactly. They do all the same things is really the point to me. And I just, how you have a kid out there tripping people and then acting like he doesn't know what happened. Like, just, it's such trash, man.
Yeah.
It's such trash. And the fact that we say it's typical Duke, like, that should tell you something.
Yeah. It's not the kind of thing we should tolerate, whether you're in a high school level, whether you're at the college level, or whether you're, say, the backup point guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is definitely not the kind of thing that we should tolerate in basketball at all. Looking at you, Deli, you suck. Okay.
I'm about to blow your mind.
What's this?
And I hope this works on the podcast, because I can't not share it right now. We had a caller on my station this week who was talking about, for some reason, was bringing up Dellavedova and was unable to pronounce
the name,
but in the most hilarious way I have ever heard in my life. So I'm going to try to put it up to the microphone right now, and if it doesn't work, I'll add it in post later. But tell me if you can hear I'm going to crank the volume. Here we go.
J.R. Smith tried to take Clay out, and Diggle Doodoo tried to break Draymond.
I'm sorry, what's his arm. What's his name again?
You know the guy from Australia, Diggle Doodoo?
Diggle Doodoo!
Diggle Doodoo!
Twice he said it.
Diggle Doodoo.
Diggle Doodoo. So now he did not misspeak. He just thought his name was Diggle Doodoo, which, as several people have hilariously pointed out, is potentially like just he's got all Australian in his head and tried to combine didgeridoo with Dellavedova, and what came out was Diggle Doodoo.
Diggle Doodoo. Oh man.
So
that's
yeah.
tremendous.
That's why sports radio is tremendous, right there.
I sports hate that guy so much. Okay.
The point of all this, though, is it's guys like this at Duke constantly, and it's not just that. It's the you can't tell me that there's somehow anything more respectable about whatever he did to get Jabari Parker to Duke than what Coach Cal's doing to get DeMarcus Cousins or whoever to Kentucky. It's the same stuff.
I go as far as to say I don't think that Coach Cal is pulling shenanigans anymore. I think Coach Cal just goes, you could field an all-NBA team of just guys that I coached. I think that's probably enough at this point.
Sure, and obviously I'm overdoing it in terms of I don't think college basketball is really people walking around with suitcases full of cash anymore. Those days are probably gone. But you'd better damn well believe all the top programs are twisting and bending and sneaking around and under and beside the rules in every possible way. And for anyone to think that somehow Coach K is above that is – patently
yeah, it's
ridiculous.
Naive. It's just naive. All right, let's talk about something that makes me happy.
Diggle
Doodoo. Diggle Doodoo, yes. And the man that Diggle Doodoo cannot catch, Steph Curry, who at this point, what I love about Steph Curry, what I'm thinking about Steph Curry is. There were kind of a wave of articles this week, after the shot against Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Trying to, put what he's doing into perspective.
Yeah.
And it's just so wild. And, one of the pieces that I saw, and I think it was the New York Times, basically compared what Steph was doing to what Babe Ruth was doing when the home run record went from 25 to 54.
Yeah, that's the Times.
That's about what he's going to do with the 3-point record. I think that he's on a pace, if he continues on his current pace, which is completely likely.
Yeah.
That it'd be the equivalent of breaking the home run record with 104 home runs or something like that.
It's not though. Because a home run is so much bigger than a 3-pointer.
Right. But it's just from a numbers basis. People put ascribe a meaning to that. I'm just saying, if somebody broke the home run record by 40%, the way Steph's going to break this 3-point record,
his own,
they would need 104 home runs, right? His own record.
He already broke it, first of all. And as of now, he owns the top 3 3-point shooting seasons ever.
Mm-hmm.
He is a cheat code for 3-pointers. Is what he is. I think the better comparison is Wayne Gretzky.
Maybe to me, the comparison, and I think that it. It really goes to how lucky you guys have been out there to witness this firsthand, but it's peak era Bonds to me. And it's from a standpoint of watching Bonds, it rewrote what was possible to, it changed the things that you thought you could see on a field. You know what I mean? You didn't think you'd ever see guys getting intentionally walked with the bases loaded on a regular basis or intentionally walked with no one on a regular basis. You didn't think you could see a guy pull up from 35 feet routinely and feel like it's going in. You know what I mean? You know what's great about that Oklahoma City buzzer beater? You've probably seen it by now. I'm sure it's been dissected over and over again in the Bay Area. But Enes Kanter.
Yeah.
Have you seen Enes Kanter?
He just kind of throws his arms up.
Shot 15 feet from the hoop at this point. And he already knows it's going in and that they're screwed.
Yeah.
There's just no one like this. You know, like, he gets the step to put that shot up. Not because the Thunder aren't paying attention, but just because their whole lives, you go a certain part of feet back. And
it seems inconceivable.
Robertson realizes it, but it's too late.
It seems inconceivable that it's reasonable for him in that situation to pull up from that distance. And people are – it's just a hard thing to become accustomed to, even knowing how great he is. I mean, look, even you and I – given 5 minutes to think about it, knowing how great he is, probably would not expect him to do that. In that situation, with those stakes, to pull up from 37 feet. 37
but,
feet.
Once he did.
It made perfect sense.
Did you think it was going in?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And by the way, it just hit the back of the rim and went straight down. It was not like, it was not a backboard shot. It was not awkward. Like, it's just a jumper, too. It's a form jumper from that distance.
This is in a game in which he's broken the record for most three-pointers in a season with 25 games left.
And that,
and the single-game record for most threes in a game.
Right, that shot ties the single-game record for most threes in a game. I mean,
and
by the way, not his best game by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
So what he's doing and the regularity with which he's doing it is completely unprecedented.
I saw PTI ask the question this week, like, is Steph changing the game? And I feel like that's – I don't know why – like, why are you asking this question? Like, it's inarguable that he is changing the game.
Well, I think it depends what you mean by that question.
Well, for one, there's, like, this kind of movement going on, and Simmons did, like – I don't know, 45 minutes on a podcast about it this week about people wanted to change the three-point line. That's for starters. But, you know, forget that. Think about, you know,
well,
how
for the record,
this
quickly,
guy is with kids.
Let's not forget that for 1 second, because the reality of that is, as you heard on that podcast from Kirk Goldsberry, the reason to do that is not Steph Curry. That actually makes Steph Curry better, as ridiculous as it may seem. He becomes one of an even more select few that can regularly hit it from out there. So moving the three-point line back, short of moving it to 40 feet, does not hurt Steph Curry.
That's the thing is if, even if you moved it to 40 feet,
he'd be
that
the best.
Might make Steph Curry the only guy.
We've
all seen the stats, right? But that his, like,
he's shooting
44% from 30 and between 30 and 50. The rest of the league shooting 11%.
No, I mean, again, you can't really hurt him, relatively speaking, by moving the three-point line, unless you moved it in, which is ridiculous. So I don't think that's an anti-Steph thing.
But the notion to me that we need to change this, like what basketball is right now and the space and the spacing and the ball movement and the marksmanship from so many, it's f***ing great. What are we, like, what are we doing? Why do we need to change this to protect the role of the power forward, who, oh, by the way, is dull? I don't understand it. Like, this is great. People like this. Seeing what the Warriors do every night is fantastic for basketball. So what are we doing?
Cosine. I don't think there's any reason to change anything. And, you know, as I think the smarter people in this conversation have said over and over again, you don't change the game because of an anomaly. Steph Curry he's the ghost in the machine. He's not, you don't do anything because of Steph Curry. And that's what I mean about changing the game. Like, I'm not sure he really changes the game in that way because he's not a trend. He's a miracle.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, like, that's the thing that I worry, and I don't know that this is really the case yet, but I worry about that getting lost in all of these discussions, is the fact that, like, you don't have to think about the problems Steph Curry creates for the rules of the game because he's the only one.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I also think just the fact that they are, you know, thinking about rule changes, whether it be for Steph or not, like,
it speaks to his impact.
And, you know, and we've talked before about all the generations of kids who are going to come up, you know, worshiping this guy.
That is how I think
that's going to create, you know?
That's how I think he changes the game.
Yeah.
That's how I think Steph changes the game is, and it'll be interesting to see because the way Michael Jordan changed the game, which could have been about killer instinct and work ethic, instead was about shooting all the time and going one-on-one.
Right.
And that was bad for basketball. Steph Curry, my sincere hope, is people will see how hard he works and how much his ball handling improves. And you know, every game when we see his warm-up, hopefully kids will take that part to heart, that he works on his ball handling before every single damn game, rather than pulling up constantly from 30 feet without working at it.
Right.
So we'll see, but my suspicion is he changes it for the positive in that the things he's good at are skills you have to practice. And if people practice those skills, they'll be better at basketball.
I don't know, you know, if the rest of his game gets enough credit. There's a great graphic going around this week too that about, like, you know, if there was no three-point shot, how good he'd still be.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. You know, it's just, he's such a tremendous all-around player right now. If you think about it, he really could win the award for the most improved player in the league this year. Like, as an MVP, as the defending MVP. You could make that case that he's the most improved player in the league, and that's incredible.
You could make that case.
Averaging 7 more points a game than he was last year.
Yeah, like, but some of that is because he has had to pick up some slack from other guys being out or not playing well. And I think he would rather be in between. Like, I think if you could really ask Steph Curry, where would he – like, he'd rather be around 25 and a couple more assists.
Sure, but he's playing that much better than he played last year as the MVP. Now, I don't think he will win the most improved. They'll probably go to McCollum or the usual guy who gets a lot more minutes and puts up a lot more stats.
Well, but, you know, another guy who could qualify is Draymond.
Yeah.
Because Draymond is leading the Warriors in assists. He's leading the league in triple-doubles. I mean, he is unbelievable right now. And as good as he was last year.
Let's say, oh, by the way, they were all pretty good last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been quite a season. And I, you know, look, I don't know how long this lasts. I mean, there's no reason, there's no signs of it slowing down, you know, but if Steph Curry goes from historically great shooter to pretty good shooter, you're going to see a significant impact in this game. So I like this, what we're seeing now, this kind of historic run, just savor it. Watch as much as you can, savor it. Like it's as good as anything going right now and probably as good as anything going in your sports life.
No question. And as good as anything in sports, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, to your point, there is a reason, and it's not just Michael Jordan temporarily retiring, that nobody has won more than 3 titles in a row since the Celtics, I believe. And it's because repeating is really hard and tiring and it's a lot of wear and tear and stress. And, yeah, these things just – stuff happens. People get old. People get injured. People want money. You know, enjoy it. You're right. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. And as we say that, it does remind you they're far from done. I haven't even gotten to repeat yet. And it's a pretty good Spurs team still sitting out there. And OKC, at least – show they can be competitive with this team.
Yeah, Mark, March 19th. Well, by the time a lot of people hear this, they'll probably have played Oklahoma City again. And assuming Steph actually plays in that game, I think they win it. But possibly more importantly, mark March 19th on your calendar. Warriors at Spurs. Second matchup this year. Warriors beat them at Oracle. Haven't won in San Antonio in the regular season in a long, long time.
That's the game I've had circled on my calendar for a very long time. A lot of Rock fans had today circled on their calendar. A lot of talk on the internet, and certainly, you know, in the 93X sphere of things, about a potential Foo Fighters breakup. There were a lot of stories going around. They scheduled a big announcement for tonight. And I got to give them props because the announcement was basically just a mockumentary of the band's breakup. I don't know. Like, I feel like, should we spoil it or should we just tell people to watch it?
I mean, you just said it was a mockumentary. I think people understand the Foo Fighters haven't broken up, and anyone who cared probably saw the video and or that headline already.
Yes, fair enough. So they made a mockumentary about breaking up in which Dave goes solo after the Oscars.
Yeah.
And the rest of the band replaces him with Nick Lachey.
Okay,
it's
so
pretty tremendous.
A couple of things that I would like to set the foundation of. First of all, agreed, very funny. Good stuff. But where are you on the Foo Fighters?
Well, here's where I am on the Foo Fighters. And, I think this plays nicely into it, to be honest. Like, when I think of the last 5 to 6 years of Foo Fighters, I think about a lot of tremendous things they've done, ingenious things they've done. Sonic Highways was a tremendous TV show. I don't know if we got a chance to talk about that much. I feel like
Never watched it.
We did at some point. It's great. And in fact, if you have an HBO Go, HBO Now sort of thing in your life, go watch it. Like, that's great homework.
Okay.
Go watch that.
Okay.
It is kind of a running documentary more about the history of music in the United States. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Than it is the record itself.
Right.
There's the tour where Dave breaks his leg and they come up with this amazing throw and figure out how to do this incredible 3-hour show. There are videos like this. There are flying to Italy to play concert for all the stuff that they do.
Here's the question. How many of the things they've done in that time that have interested you have been music?
Almost none.
Yeah.
Yes. They've made a couple of pretty forgettable records in this time.
The Sonic Highways record was forgettable.
Highly.
The Saint Cecilia EP I actually kind of liked, but
Saint Cecilia the song is the best single they've had in a while. But you're going back a few albums before they had a really great hit, and I just in general, I wish that they would put some of the creativity and ingenuity and smarts that they put into doing so many of these projects back into some of the records.
Do you would you buy that just like maybe the musical curiosity isn't there anymore?
Yeah, look, it could just be that they don't have that much to say. And you know what? There's not really anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, all bands lose it. We've talked about this theory that I have, right?
Yes.
All bands lose it.
Yeah.
And they're on 20 years now. So there's certainly no shame in, you can't find the peak anymore.
Well, that
happens
was one
to all kinds of bands.
That was one of the things I found funny about the mockumentary was, they were creating this sort of persona for Dave Grohl where, he felt like after playing some guitar during Blackbird, during the In Memoriam at the Oscars was, finally his chance to be huge. The thoughts I had were twofold. Number one, he was in the biggest rock band of the last, 30 years?
Yeah.
And secondly, the Foo Fighters were his thing, that he went out on his own and started his own thing and made a thing. Like, He doesn't need to go solo. What is it? Like, it's ridiculous. Dave Grohl has had one of the best rock and roll lives ever already.
Yeah.
And he's what? Yeah. He's what, mid-40s or something? Like, if Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters age somewhat gracefully into, you know, oblivion without really making any more seminal music, I'm not mad at him.
No. I mean, he's dead solid lock to be a two-time member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
And to do that, you know, from our era of rock, I don't know that anyone else is going to do it. I don't know anyone else is going to do it.
What about... this is a little morbid. What about Scott Weiland? Does Velvet Revolver?
No. Velvet Revolver has zero chance. I'm not sure Stone Temple Pilots have a chance.
They should.
Time is aging them, and I think Weiland's death helps a little bit.
Yeah.
I think time is cementing their legacy a little bit.
Okay. I mean, part of that is like, I don't know if there's as much band jumping as there used to be as part of the lack of two-time
members. Yeah, I mean, look, it's, you know, you have a guy like Jack White who plays in a lot of bands.
He'll probably be in somehow. He should be in somehow. I don't know how.
I think the White Stripes will get in, but I doubt any of his other projects will.
What about just Jack White?
I don't think he's getting in the Hall of Fame based on his solo work. So I think he'd be getting in the Hall of Fame based on the White Stripes. But I could be wrong.
I don't think over time, I mean, his solo work has been more and more interesting. It could definitely, like, I love Jack White. This is probably not the right conversation for me.
Yeah. I love Jack White too, but anyway, I think it's a pretty rare feat, and it is something to be commendable, but it doesn't change the fact that the Foo Fighters have not had a lot to say in a new song in a very, very long time.
Yeah, and just it hasn't felt fresh or whatever that rock thing is that makes you start to jump up and down when you hear a great new rock song that hasn't been there.
Yeah, or memorable, or... yeah, fiery, which, you know, a lot of the best Foo Fighters songs are pretty fiery.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I can think of, and part of this was the time, but, like, I associate them with the videos and with, you know, they're locked in my brain in that certain way. And I'm not even a diehard Foo Fighters fan by any stretch. I mean, I think they're perfectly good. I think they're basically, you know, a pop rock band, which is great. And they're good at it. But even by that standard, the music lately hasn't been anything really noticeable.
No. And they've almost evolved into more of a classic rock band now. You get a lot of classic rock covers when you go to any Foo show these days.
Interesting.
And it fits right in line. Fits right in line, I think, with where they're at musically. And they're looking to do the 3-hour Springsteen kind of show. A lot of bands on that template now, too. All right. Should we give out some homework, or are we good here?
Well, I think I'm going to have to watch Sonic Highways, although I'm not sure it's something we should talk about. Oh, didn't I tell you to watch Anomalisa last week?
You did.
But you didn't do it. Okay.
I have to go to the theater to do that still, right?
It's a good question. It might be at like an on-demand level at somewhere. Right. I'm not sure.
I'll see if I can bang that out this weekend.
It's an experience.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Well, you didn't seem like you were into it when you never went and saw it last week.
Sorry, I have a life. All right, and on that note, if you have a life, we release you to go do it. And we will see you back here next week on another Toy Department.
Bye-bye. This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.